delivered by Venerable Usilananda at the Tathagata Meditation Center, San Jose, California, special retreat of November 1998.
Today, I will talk about a discourse given by the Buddha, and it is found in the collection of medium length discourses, and this discourse is about the taking heritage. The name of this discourse is called Dhamma Dayada Sutta. Now, you know, Buddha's teachings are divided into three main divisions. The first one is the rules and regulations for monks and nuns. And the third division is higher teachings of Buddhist psychology and philosophy. But the second division, which is the largest, contains the discourses given by the Buddha to both lay people and monks. And they are the popular teachings of the Buddha. And most people know, what most people know about the Buddhism comes from these discourses. And as you know, the majority of these discourses begin with the usual words, Evamme Sutam, thus have I heard. And almost every sutta, an information about that sutta was given, where this sutta was taught, and on what occasion it was taught, and to whom it was taught. So most discourses contained these informations. Take for example the discourse on the benefits of being a recluse. Now that sutta was taught by the Buddha as a response to the question put to him by King Ajatasattu. That is a fairly long discourse, and so it is included in the collection of long discourses. Those of you are familiar with the blessing discourse, Mangala Sutta. So Mangala Sutta was given by the Buddha, delivered by the Buddha, because a deity came to him during the night and asked him to teach him the blessings. So it was at the request of that deity that Buddha taught the blessings. And there are other suttas where no occasion for delivering the discourse was given. So Buddha just talked to the monks. And this sutta belongs to that second category. So nobody asked the Buddha to deliver this discourse, and there was no occasion for delivering this discourse, but Buddha just came and then talked to the monks. The daily schedule of the Buddha, the first part of the night was reserved for monks. So during that time, monks go to him, went to him, asked him questions or requested him to give a meditation subject and so on. So that time, that period was reserved for monks. And so it must be at such a time, such a period, that Buddha delivered this discourse, because he, and also during the time of the Buddha, monks assembled in the Dhamma hall and maybe waited for the Buddha, and they always have a seat prepared for him. So he just went into the assembly and then called the monks and then taught what he wanted to teach. Buddha first caught the attention of the monks by calling them, "O monks." And the monks always responded by the words, "Bhadante." It is like the word "bhante." So they responded as "Your Reverence." And then Buddha taught. First thing Buddha said was, "Monks, be my heirs in Dhamma, not my heirs in material things." That means be the takers of Dhamma heritage and not the takers of material heritage. So by this sentence, Buddha wanted his disciples to take the Dhamma heritage, not the material heritage, from him. Buddha also gave reasons why he wanted his disciples to be heirs in Dhamma and not heirs in material things. And then he again taught or exhorted them to be heirs in Dhamma with an example. Then after teaching with an example, Buddha got up and went back to his chamber. And when Buddha left, the Venerable Sariputta continued the teaching. So this sutta contains teachings of two teachers, of the Buddha and of the Venerable Sariputta. His disciples to be heirs in Dhamma. Now, what is the Dhamma heritage? What does Dhamma mean here? Now, we meet the word Dhamma again. It tells us that there are two kinds of Dhamma here and two kinds of material things. Two kinds of Dhamma are the real Dhamma, or the direct Dhamma and indirect Dhamma, or the real Dhamma and roundabout Dhamma. And the material things also are of two kinds, the direct material things and indirect material things, or the real material things and roundabout material things. Then Buddha was very emphatic, very clear. He does not say just "be my heirs in Dhamma." He also said, "be not my heirs in material things." So he's very specific. So now we must understand the Dhamma, the direct Dhamma and the indirect Dhamma. These are for the realization of the Four Noble Truths, or for the eradication of mental defilements. And when a person gets enlightenment, then at that moment of enlightenment, a type of consciousness arises in his mind, and that type of consciousness is called the path consciousness. And that consciousness has the power to destroy mental defilements, at the same time taking Nibbana as object. And that path consciousness is immediately followed by fruit consciousness. It is said that there are two or three moments of fruit consciousness following one moment of path consciousness. And there are four types of path consciousness and four types of fruit consciousness. Wow. Take Nibbana as object. So four types of path consciousness, four types of fruit consciousness, and their object Nibbana came to be called the nine supramundane states or nine supramundane dhammas. So these are the heritages Buddha wanted to leave for his disciples. These are called heritages because when the disciples attain these types of consciousness or these stages of enlightenment, they get free from mental defilement, and so they get free from suffering, or they get free from rebirth in the samsara. Person gets the first path and the first fruit consciousness, he is called a sotapanna, a stream entrant. So a stream entrant eradicates some mental defilements altogether or once and for all. And since he has eradicated the mental defilements that would bring him down to four woeful states, he will not be reborn in these four woeful states. And also there will be only seven more lives for him to go until he attain final passing away. He's called a once returner. No, right? Sagadagami, yeah, he's called a once returner. That means he will return to this human world only once. That means he has only two more rebirths. One rebirth in the celestial realm and back to the human world. So he has only two more rebirths before he attained Nibbana. His returner does not eradicate any mental defilements, but he makes the remaining mental defilements thinner or weaker. Person reaches the third stage, or the third path and fruition consciousness, he is called a non-returner. That means he will not return to this world of human beings and lower celestial beings. So he will be reborn in the world of Brahmas. So he will have rebirth as a Brahma, and he may have only one rebirth as a Brahma, or two, three, four, five rebirths as Brahma. And this one non-returner eradicates sensual desire and ill will. A person reaches the fourth stage, he is called an arahant. So an arahant eradicates all the remaining mental defilements. Since he has eradicated all the mental defilements, there is no more rebirth for him. Be my heirs in Dhamma, he wanted us to attain one of these states. The four fruits and Nibbana, altogether nine, are called direct Dhamma here. The indirect Dhamma is the meritorious deeds done with the expectation of getting out of this round of rebirths. Now, when we do meritorious deeds, sometimes we direct our minds to getting out of this round of rebirths, and sometimes people may turn their minds to just getting the worldly benefits, worldly results. So the meritorious deeds done with the intention of getting out of this round of rebirths is called here indirect Dhamma, because these meritorious deeds we do with the intention of getting out of the samsara will ultimately or gradually take us to the realization of the direct Dhamma. So they are not the direct Dhamma, but they can lead us to the direct Dhamma. So they are called indirect Dhamma. Be my heirs in Dhamma, he included this indirect Dhamma in the Dhamma. So by this exhortation, Buddha wanted us to do meritorious deeds with the intention of getting out of samsara and ultimately to gain enlightenment. Do meritorious deeds. We must be careful that we make aspiration for getting out of this samsara or for realization of nibbana, and not for worldly gains such as longevity or prosperity or beauty and others. So when meritorious deeds are done with the intention of getting out of this samsara, these meritorious deeds can gradually lead us to the realization of the true Dhamma. Dana, make offerings, or when you keep precepts, or when you offer flowers, perfumes and others to the Buddha and others, then you should direct your mind to Nibbana, or the realization of the Four Noble Truths. And also the jhanas people attained through the practice of samatha meditation. Also, when they are directed to the attainment of nibbana, then they can lead those to that attainment. But if people practice and get jhana with the intention of worldly benefits, then they will get worldly benefits only and not the ultimate benefit of getting out of this samsara. Kinds of material things. First one is the direct material thing, and second the indirect material thing. So here material things means the four requisites that monks receive. Now there are four requisites for monks, and that they are food, clothing, dwelling place, and medicine, because they are necessary, or because they are, how do you call that? They conducive to the well-being of monks. That they are called requisites. They are the ones that monks need to survive. So without food, monks cannot survive. Without clothing, without robes, without dwelling place, or without medicine, they cannot survive. And so these four things are called the requisites for monks. But actually, These four things are requisites not only for monks, for lay people also. You also need these four requisites. You need food, you need clothing, you need a house to live in, and you need medicine. So these are the necessary things for survival of human beings. Now here, the material things means these four requisites that monks get. These requisites to the monks. Lay people. But here, these requisites are called Buddha's heritage. That means Buddha's things, Buddha's possessions. It is because Buddha allowed monks to accept the requisites offered by lay people, and Buddha allowed lay people to offer requisites to monks. So, although these requisites are actually given by lay people, these are called Buddha's things, or Buddha's heritage. Correct material things is, again, meritorious deeds done with the intention of getting just worldly benefits. So if you do a meritorious deed and wish for, say, longevity, or for beauty, or for rebirth in human realm, or in the realm of devas, and so on, then that meritorious deed is called indirect material things. Because although they are meritorious deeds, not things, they lead ultimately to getting these material things. They lead ultimately to getting wealth, possessions, and beauty, longevity, and so on. And so they are called here indirect material things. Four kinds of heritages. Two dhammas, dhamma heritage, and two material heritage. And among these four, Buddha exhorted us to take the dhamma heritage only and not the material heritage. And why did Buddha want his disciples to be heirs in dhamma and not heirs in material things? Buddha said, "I have compassion for you, thinking in what way my disciples will be heirs in dhamma and not heirs in material things." So the main thing is, Buddha said, "I have compassion for you." That means if you go after material things, as heritage, then you will suffer. If you go for the material things only, then you will do anything. You will break rules, and you will use means, whether just or unjust, or you will use means forbidden by the Buddha to get material things, especially for monks. And so when you get material things, then you will be attached to them. And so the attachment to the material things will take you down to the four woeful states. And even though you are not attached to these material things, because you use unlawful means to acquire these material things, you will go down to four woeful states. So the path of material gains is actually the path to suffering. And so Buddha had compassion for his monks, and so he exhorted them not to follow the path of material gains, but to follow the path of Dhamma. So this is one reason why Buddha wanted his disciples to be heirs in Dhamma, because he had compassion for them, and he did not want them to go astray and to resort to means that are forbidden by him. Another reason why he exhorted monks to be heirs in Dhamma, and that is, if monks are heirs in material things and not in Dhamma, then they will be censured by people. They will be reproached, saying, although these monks are the disciples of the Buddha, they do not take the advice of the Buddha, and they go after material things and so on. So Buddha said, you will be reproached if you are heirs not in Dhamma but in material things. And I will also be reproached, because people will say, oh, this Buddha, he claimed to be an omniscient one, but he is unable to teach his disciples to be heirs in Dhamma. So both the monks and the Buddha will be reproached if the monks become the heirs in material things and not in Dhamma. Continued, if you are heirs in Dhamma and not in material things, then you will not be reproached, and I will not be reproached either. So you become heirs in Dhamma and not in material things. Father taught with an example. The Buddha said, suppose I have eaten. I mean, Buddha said, suppose I have eaten and I finished eating, and then there is some alms food left over, and that is to be thrown away. And suppose two monks arrived who are hungry and weak. Then I will tell them, monks, I finished eating, and there is some left over, and that is to be thrown away. You may eat it if you like. If you don't eat it, then I will throw it away where there is no where there are no green plants and trees, or I will drop it into water where there is no life. That means I will have to throw it away if you don't eat. Might think in this way. Now Buddha said that he had eaten and there is something left over, and he said, if we do not eat it, then he will throw it away or float it on the water. So there is a food, and I am weak and I am hungry. But Buddha had said that we are not to be heirs in material things, but to be heirs in Dhamma. So following that advice, he would avoid eating that food and pass the night and day hungry and weak. So that is the first monk. So he will not take the food, because taking the food means taking the material things heritage. Now the second monk, he thought differently. Now there is a food Buddha had eaten, and there is the food left over. And if I do not eat it, Buddha will throw it away. And so why not eat the food so that I can get rid of hunger and weakness, and then I will spend the night and day in comfort. So, say he took the food. Then Buddha said, among these two monks, the one who did not eat the food but passed the day and night is more praiseworthy. Now, Buddha did not blame the one who ate the food, but he said the monk who did not eat the food but avoid eating the food and spend the night with hunger and weakness, so that monk is more praiseworthy. So both monks are praiseworthy, but the first monk is more praiseworthy than the others, because when they passed the night and day, they did not pass idling. They passed the day and night in meditation. So both were good monks, but Buddha said the first monk is more praiseworthy than the second monk. So why was the first monk more praiseworthy than the second one? Now Buddha said his practice of refusing to eat the food will help him in the future to practice fewness of wishes, to practice contentment, to practice scraping away mental defilements, and to be easy to support and to arouse energy when he is discouraged or when he is low in spirits. That monk is tormented by thoughts of getting more and more. So when such thoughts arise in him, he could admonish himself, saying, "You even give up eating the food and you spend the night hungry and weary at that time. So why can you not resist this to having many wishes? So how can you not resist the having many wishes?" And also, he may sometimes become not content with what he has. He may want more things for himself, and then he can admonish himself, like saying himself, you even relinquish eating food on that occasion, and why not can you be content this time, and so on. So he can use that practice or that incident as a means for admonishing him when he is attacked by such thoughts of desire and thoughts of discontentment or thoughts of mental defilements. So that is why this monk is said to be more praiseworthy than the other monk. Aims to have few wishes, to be content, to scrape mental defilements away, and to be easy to support, and to be energetic. So when a monk wants to act against this training or against this advice, then he can admonish himself if he had avoided eating that food left over by the Buddha. That is why Buddha said he was more praiseworthy than the other monk. So monks are trained to be content and to be easy to support. That is very important quality in a monk. So if a monk wants this and that and he is not satisfied with just what he has, he causes suffering to himself as well as to those who support him. So monks should be those who are easy to support. That means who are content with what they are given. And also they are to be content with what they already have. So these are the two qualities, especially these two qualities monks have to develop. So Buddha exhorted his disciples to be heirs in Dhamma and not to be heirs in material things. And how many reasons did he give? Because he had compassion for monks, because if they follow the path of material things, then they will suffer in four woeful states. And so he had compassion for the monks, and so he exhorted them to be heirs in Dhamma and not to be heirs in material things. And the second reason he gave was, if you don't follow the path of Dhamma, if you are not heirs in Dhamma, then you will be reproached, and I will also be reproached. So that is a second reason. And the third is, if you follow the path of Dhamma, if you are not an heir to material things, then you can admonish yourself later when thoughts of greed, thoughts of craving and others come to torment your mind. So for these three reasons, Buddha exhorted his disciples to be heirs in Dhamma and not in material things. Okay, Buddha did not want us to be heirs in material things. But does that mean that we must not accept any requisites at all? Without the requisites, we cannot survive. So we have to accept, we have to have these requisites. So I think what Buddha meant here was not to accept requisites at all, but to practice contentment, to practice fewness of wishes with regard to these requisites, and not to be attached to these requisites, and not to try to get more and more requisites. Because when a person or a monk wants more and more, then he will resort to any means, not only lawful means but unlawful means also he will resort to. And so I think here Buddha wanted us to practice restraint with regard to the requisites, but not to get requisites at all. Then that is impossible. What heritage we will take? There are four choices: two Dhamma and two material things. Which ones would you choose? All four?
No. Just first two.
So the first priority should be the first one, right? The Dhamma. And if not the first one, then the second one. The meritorious deeds with with inclination to get out of the samsara, And the third one is not for you. It is for monks only. So, and what about the fourth one? Doing meritorious deeds with the intention of getting worldly results.
That's all of us. Most of us.
So, now the best thing is the first one, right? And the next best thing is second one. And then the best thing after that is, I think, the fourth one. Now, once my preceptor, not Mahasisyara, he was another teacher, my preceptor, he was a very famous preacher. So in one of his preachings, he said, even if you cannot do the meritorious deeds inclining towards the getting out of samsara, you may even do the last one. Because it is better than doing no merit at all. So, and he gave us a analogy. Suppose you are drowning, and there is a carcass of an animal near you. What will you do? You will hold on to it, or you will let yourself drown. So, when you are drowning in the samsara, so even that may be good for you, if there is no other thing. I mean, so. Although the merit with the intention of getting out of samsara is to be preferred, sometimes if we cannot get that type of merit, then we may get the other type of merit. Because this merit which leads us back into the samsara, but it will lead us to better existences or better lives, and so we can change ourselves when we get to the better lives, and we can acquire meritorious deeds with the intention of getting out of the samsara. So, since the fourth one is also a type of merit, it is preferable to not doing merit at all. doing merit with the intention of getting worldly results is better than not doing merit at all. That is what I said.
I see. Thank you.
Okay. So, now we are practicing Vipassana meditation. So what heritage are we taking? The first one?
Yes.
We are trying to take the first one. Right? Yeah. And the second one, I think Vipassana is also a meritorious deed. And when we practice Vipassana, we direct our minds to getting rid of samsara, right? To getting rid of mental defilements. So I think we are taking the second heritage also. So I think we are the dutiful followers, dutiful disciples of the Buddha. Buddha concluded his short discourse with the very words he said in the beginning, that is, monks, be my heirs in Dhamma and not my heirs in material things, because I have compassion for you, thinking how, in what way my disciples will be heirs in Dhamma and not my heirs and material things. So he concluded, I think it is to emphasize the taking of Dhamma heritage. So he concluded his short talk with the very words he said in the beginning. Is the Buddha rose from his seat and went into his dwelling. So he got up and left. So when the Buddha left, it was the responsibility of the chief disciple to continue his teachings. So Sariputta took up the teaching and gave a talk to the monks. Because why the Buddha left, the reason why the Buddha left was not given. But in some discourses, the reason was given. Sometimes a Buddha got up and left saying, I have an ache in my back, and so I want to relax. And then he would leave. But here Buddha did not say anything, so he didn't suffer any backache here. To give chance to the Venerable Sariputta to teach the monks. So he left. And the Venerable Sariputta addressed the monks, saying, "Friend monks," or "friends monks." Then they replied, "Friend." Now there is a difference between the Buddha and the disciples. When the Buddha addressed the monks, Buddha just say, "O monks," and then they would say, "Venerable Sir." But when a disciple like Sariputta addressed the monks, he said, "Friends monks," not just monks. So he used the word "friends." And then they responded with the word "friend" again, "O friend." So during the time of the Buddha, monks call each other, let's say, "friend." In Pali, "auso." So whether the monk is older than him or younger than him, they would address him as "friend." But after the death of the Buddha, it was changed. And a younger monk never called an older monk "friend." We call Bhante or Venerable Sir. And the older monk or younger monk, "auso," that means a friend. So during the time of the Buddha, this different form of address was not introduced yet. So only after the death of the Buddha, actually Buddha gave instructions to monks that after my passing away, you should address the younger monks should address older monks by the word "Bhante," and older monks should address the younger monks by the word "Auso," that means the Venerable Sir and friend.
That's in Vinaya.
Yeah, that's in Vinaya. So here, the Venerable Sariputta said, "Friends monks," and then they said, "Friends." That there may be those who are younger than the Venerable Sariputta in the audience, but they just say "friend." So
I got the terms now.
Oh.
Naika Papo.
And so the Venerable Sariputta continued the Dhamma talk, teaching them about the three kinds of seclusion, and then telling them the evil states that are to be abandoned, and also telling them that there is a way, a middle way, for the abandonment of these mental defilements. So we will hear Sariputta tomorrow, what he said.